My, what are they teaching them in these schools? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
As always, it's a pleasure to be back with you. And for once, one of our rare times, we're face-to-face in the studio.
Well, we're face-to-face-to-face today in the studio, Chuck, because, ladies and gentlemen, we have a special treat for you this Saturday. We have a special guest with us today, and we're going to be talking about some things that are happening across the country, but specifically on some things that are probably going to be happening very soon here in the state of Ohio. With us today is Robert Latimer, Dr. Robert Latimer, who is the president of an organization called Citizens for Objective Public Education, or COPE for short. I like that, COPE. I think we should all try to cope. But Dr. Latimer has a background in analytical chemistry and has worked as a research chemist and just recently retired. But since idle hands are the devil's workshop, as they say, he decided to jump right in to becoming not just the president, but also the secretary of Citizens for Objective Public Education, which is a national organization whose mission is stated as promoting objectivity in public school curricula that address religious questions and issues so that the educational effect of the teaching is religiously neutral. Dr. Latimer, welcome to Principles and Policies, and expound a little bit on what COPE is really all about. I mean, that mission statement, I think, leads to quite a few questions probably in our listeners' minds about the whole issue of addressing religious questions and religious neutrality.
Right. Well, and first of all, I'm very glad to be with you guys today. I think the issues that we're going to talk about are ones that are very key, especially to parents and school children that go to public schools, because they're exposed to a lot of things that some of us as parents, particularly Christian parents, would prefer they not be exposed to in public schools. And we're trying to do something about it. And we think our approach is unique and new. It's an approach that hasn't been tried before, but we think legally it has very good precedent, and that down the road we're going to find some success in helping parents with issues in their public schools. COPE is only a year old. We started about this time last year. We have a board consisting of seven people from around the country. One of our members is from Idaho, one from South Carolina, one from New Mexico. We have two in Kansas, and I'm from Ohio. And so we're very much spread out around the country. COPE is basically an organization that is looking at the approach that public schools use when they're teaching subjects that deal with religion.
And I guess for most of our listeners, when you say that phrase, the first thing they start thinking about, well, if it's a Christian school, it's obviously a Bible curriculum or comparative religions. But in the public school venue, the first thing that comes to mind, I think, for most of our listeners is the science classes, because that's where the entire wrestling match and the debate has been for decades, well, almost 100 years now, if you think about the Scopes monkey trial, between the idea of evolutionism and creation being taught. But that's not exactly, you guys aren't just talking about science curriculum, now are you?
No, that's certainly a big part of it. We're dealing with anything in the curriculum that deals with a religious issue, so I should probably tell you what a religious issue is. A religious issue is something that deals with what we call ultimate questions, and the main ultimate questions are, where did we come from? What's our origin? How we should live our lives? That's morality and ethics and that sort of thing. And also how religion is used in the classroom, how it is taught, how it is approached. And unfortunately, in the public schools these days, they have this definition of religion that's really antiquated. We think of religion traditionally, in the traditional sense, as having to do with theistic things that have to do with God. But the courts over the last several years have rendered several decisions which include non-theistic beliefs in the definition of religion. And this is belief systems like Buddhism, atheism, secular humanism. These are all religions according to the legal system in the U.S., but a lot of people don't realize that. And so the public schools, when they think about religion, they try to avoid anything that's theistic. They want to take God out of the curriculum, even though most people in the United States are believers in God.
Well, Dr. Lambert, let me kind of push back on that a little bit, because it's my thinking or understanding from what I've seen out there that it isn't all theistic religions that schools are pushing out of the curriculum. It's one specific theistic religion, that would be Christianity, because we still have Judaism, which is taught, Buddhism and Hinduism, and you see that even in the phys ed courses when they start teaching yoga and meditation. You see it in history when they teach about Islam and other religions. There doesn't seem to be any shying away from non-monotheistic Christianity, non-Christian religion, whether it be pantheism that we teach in Greek and Roman history and ancient history, whether it be, again, like I said, with some of the Near Eastern religions. Those things don't seem to have any kind of heart palpitations or pulse stopping for the public school educators to grab a hold of and talk about, and oftentimes in glowing terms, as we've seen in states like California and others, where they're advancing these type of religions to the point of, you know, having kids get on prayer rugs and bow to Mecca as part of a multicultural experience. But when it comes to monotheistic Christian religion, the God of the Bible, that's where the schools start drawing their line about having to be quote-unquote religiously neutral.
That is essentially correct. But this is all part of the progressive movement that's been going on since the early part of the 20th century. And they want to get rid of all religion, actually, whether it's theistic or partially theistic or pantheistic. They want to get rid of all religion. But to them, the most threatening religion is Christianity, because Christianity has basic tenets that say that Christianity is the only religion, the only way for salvation to occur is through Jesus Christ. And most other religions consider themselves as just one way. And there are many ways to get to where you want to go, which is heaven. But the Christian religion is much different in that it's very exclusive, and the path to salvation is very specific. So that's the one that they're really concentrating on, that they want to get rid of. But they're really wanting to get rid of all religions.
Just real quick, Buddhism is not a theistic religion.
No. Hey, well, thank you.
I appreciate it. It's a philosophy, actually, mm-hmm. which is, when you get into the deeper tenets of it, it's pantheistic.
Oh, it's very pantheistic.
Or panentheistic, I guess.
Is it Buddhism or is it Hinduism?
Hinduism
that talks about the whole idea the world is on the back of an elephant standing on a turtle.
It's an infinite regression of things But again, when you get into that, most Hindus don't buy that anymore.
But most of them are about as cafeteria Hindu as most Christians are cafeteria Christians.
Like a lot of non-theistic and even atheistic and agnostics, the God in those religions is the self, or the world, or the universe,
that's the reason why I know I've said on this program before, I don't believe in atheists. I don't believe that there are any atheists, because they all have something that they believe in as a higher source of power.
Well, look, we've talked about this on our program before. Everybody believes in some kind of higher power.
Yes.
The fact is that something is out there. There's matter here, and some people, therefore, because matter is here and because energy is here, they worship energy and matter as a higher power. Well, okay, fine, but that doesn't mean you're not theistic. You are worshiping those things, and therefore you have a theistic worldview. No one has a non-theistic worldview, truly. Everybody has one. So this idea that there's only one theistic belief that we're brooming out it's disingenuous on its face.
Well, no, it's disingenuous to the fact that we're brooming it out.
Exactly, that's what I mean.
It's not disingenuous to the fact that there's only one truly theistic, monotheistic religion that is exclusive, and that is Christianity. So what you would say with Citizens for Objective Public Education, Dr. Latimer, is that there needs to be a level playing field, that if we're going to be talking about all these issues, and again, as I mentioned, you know, we kind of lean toward the science end of this as far as origins and where did we come from. But according to what you guys are saying here as well, that it doesn't just include origins and science. It includes our health, psychological and social science, religion and history, ethics, morality, human sexuality, marriage, family, human behavior, sanctity of life. And of course, for my Chuck and my perspective, we would go on and extend that a little further and say it extends to economics and business and your education choices, and all areas of life have a religious component to it of some sort or the other, because number one, again, I think like the courts, as you were mentioning, we recognize that all of these various quote-unquote philosophies or viewpoints are religiously based in some way or form. And I think that's what you were saying about the courts, is they've recognized even secular humanism as being a religion.
The problem really is that it's very hard to put a line of demarcation between what's religious and what is not religious. It's impossible, really, to truly separate the two. But as a government entity, a public school, you have to try to make that separation because of the First Amendment requires it. So you have to try and make that demarcation. I agree, you're never going to get completely there, but as public entities, you have to try to make that separation. And our view would be that you need to be objective when you deal with issues that have to do with religion. Now, not everything in the curriculum has to do with religion. I don't think there's much religious content in mathematics or English. You know, perhaps you could argue that the literature...
Okay.
It depends on which curriculum you're using.
It's interesting you bring that up, because I have actually used that as an argument for intelligent design, because mathematics follows law. Essentially, you have to have law to make math work. Okay, where'd the law come from? If you have law, you have a lawgiver. Congress did not sit down and pass rules for why 1 + 1 = 2.
But don't hold your breath. They may be trying to do that.
Well, they've attempted to make us. Yeah, they've attempted to make us think that balanced budgets actually have trillions of dollars worth of deficits in them. So you know, they don't understand it from that standpoint. But I had a friend. I'll give you an example. I had a guy who lived right next door there. And he would come in and tell me, he says, you know, I can prove mathematically that 1 + 1 doesn't necessarily equal 2. And I said, okay. And he went through the whole explanation. I said, yeah, I've read that proof. I said, I'm not telling you I understood that proof, but I understood what you did. You bring in some uncertainty. You bring in a statistical argument and bring in uncertainty to it. And then you can claim. But I said, John, answer me this question. And I held up two fingers, one on each hand. And I said, how many fingers am I holding up? And he said, 2. And I said, okay, I think we just proved that there may be a flaw in your proof. Mathematics follows law. So therefore, there is a theistic component to that, unless you think that the laws of physics and logic and mathematics are simply random collections of rules that kind of work, but we're not sure why.
Well, they got here by chance just like we did,
yes,
right?
Yes, they got here by chance.
Primordial ooze and lightning? No.
Yeah.
Well, I would have to look at it in terms of how we define religion.
Yes, as basic,
fundamental questions about life. And I don't think math really addresses where did we come from, where are we going, should we live.
I agree.
Those are my criteria.
Something is religious or not. That's a good point, and you've narrowed the scope to the point where if someone brought up that particular objection that I just did, it's easily argued. It's like, look, we're not asking that question. You're expanding into a place where we're not necessarily looking to go. That is up to the individual to deal with.
But on the other hand, I perfectly agree with you that one can look at any area of life or any subject and find religious connotations in it. But that's why we've defined it more narrowly to try and make that demarcation.
Now, Dr. Lamry, we're taping this on Thursday. Or excuse me, this is Wednesday, isn't it? I missed a day. Okay, never mind. We'll cut this part out. But anyhow, we were earlier before we taped this, we were at a meeting at the state legislature with some members of the General Assembly and some folks from the pro-family movement. And you brought up a point there, and I want you to share with our listening audience about the idea, and you kind of touched on it in your opening, that the definition of religion, this is kind of a new approach on how you're trying to implement that with relation to some of the activities and the projects that you're working on.
Well, yes. You know, the best example is evolution. There was one time when evolution was prohibited from being taught in public schools. And we've gone from there in the 1920s after the Scopes trial to today where creationism and intelligent design are the ones that are prohibited and evolution is the only one that's allowed. Well, the difference is that the courts have changed their definition of religion over the past several years. And there are many court decisions now that ruled that these non-theistic belief systems are considered religions for First Amendment purposes. And that's where we're going now. Now, and there have been some previous legal cases where evolution and intelligent design and creationism have been adjudicated. All of those decisions in recent years have gone against in teaching intelligent design and creationism in public schools. But none of those cases use the current proper definition of religion. All of those cases said that theistic religion was the only religion, and that atheism or materialism, which is the base of evolution, those are not religions. And so all those cases were wrongly decided because they used a wrong definition of religion. Had those cases said that religion included atheism and materialism, as well as theistic religions, then the decisions should have been different. So that's where we're going with our approach, is to insist that this court definition of religion be used in these cases. And we think that that way the neutrality and objectivity will come in.
And let's think about it in this light. I know, and because we teach it in our Institute on the Constitution classes that Chuck and I teach, that the courts have actually decided, and I believe this was in the 70s, but I'll look it up and we'll before the end of the program and we'll get that specific, that among religions, and they, and this court decision didn't branch out and say theistic or atheist, but they included ethical culture, secular humanism, atheism, and others. Mm-hmm. As recognized religions. But now you're saying that the courts now, when they're dealing with these ID or creation cases, are trying to change the definition that the Supreme Court had established 30, 40 years ago. So yeah. Are they running against precedent in doing that?
They seem to be ignorant about the cases that the Supreme Court has decided in recent years on this topic. They're using the old definition of religion. Why they're doing that, I am not sure. I assume that they're either just doing it because they like the old definition of religion or because they just don't know any different.
So the definition that your organization, that the COPE is using, is the more inclusive definition of religion. And, well, I guess the question is, as you're working, and you've said you're working in some other states as well as Ohio, in trying to put forward some policy changes that embrace that more inclusive definition of religion, is one of the goals trying to set up a court challenge to change that perspective of the court so that they will look at the definition of religion in that more inclusive light?
The court is really the last resort. We would prefer that legislators and public officials recognize their error and do the right thing. If they do that, we'll be very happy. If they don't, then certainly litigation is the next step. But we'd prefer that they did it because they know it's right.
So basically what you would like to do is see something like state boards of education set standards on the basis of this type of openness that you're promoting. Doesn't that say something about the importance that people need to pay a closer attention to those particular elections and appointments?
State Board of Education in Ohio is partially elected and partially appointed. 11 members are elected by districts, 8 members are appointed by the governor. And so the governor has a lot of influence on our State Board of Education. Other states do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
But in Ohio, we have a mixed state board. And I would prefer that it went back to an all-elected state board because that's where our accountability is with people in the elections. And there is a bill pending in the Ohio House right now that would change the state board back to an all-elected system, and I would certainly be in favor of that.
Do you know the number?
The bill number is HB House Bill 58, and I like the idea of the bill very much. It changes the system back to an all-elected state board of education. The part of the bill that I'm not real enthusiastic about is that it names the state board districts as the current congressional districts. we have 11 districts now on the state board, and in my opinion, the best thing to do would be just get rid of the 8 members that are appointed by the governor. But the bill is headed in the right direction, and I certainly support the idea of going back to an all-elected board.
Yeah, it's very difficult to get everything you want in a bill.
Oh, you never do.
Never.
It's always compromise.
As we talked about today in our meeting, as Barry mentioned earlier, we never get exactly what we want, but we can get close enough that it's supportable. Now, I'm going to ask you a slightly more philosophical question, because something that comes up when I think about some of these issues to me is I go back to the Renaissance and Galileo. Wouldn't Galileo have been in the same trouble had we transport him to the 21st century and we make him a creationist, which I think he was, and we have him arguing from the vantage point of interpreting the data, and he's being persecuted because of the way he interprets the data, which is exactly what happened to Galileo back in the 15th century. And so he was essentially saying, look, here's what the data points me to, and the powers that be were saying, no, that's not permissible. Even though they, under the table, they were admitting, yeah, you have a point, but you can't do it this way, was essentially what happened to Galileo. Wouldn't he be in the same trouble today with the way we have the system set up as he was? Of course, he wasn't under the pressure of death in the 21st century, but you understand what I'm asking, hopefully.
Yeah, well, you're basically talking about how changes in scientific thesis occurs. Science is very difficult to change. New ideas that come forth generally take an awfully long time before they become established. And in a sense, intelligent design is in that category. It's a relatively young idea, maybe 20, 30 years old. Any new theory in science is always challenged by the establishment. And that's the case with evolution today. Evolution is the paradigm that's been established now for over 100 years. And any opposition to it is challenged by the establishment. That's just the way it is. And I predict it will be another 50 years or so when all of the old establishment people are gone and are retired before the real changes will come. But Galileo is just an example of how slowly science changes. That's not all bad. You don't want a system that changes very quickly.
Right.
Because it may not be a good change. But I think it's a little too difficult to get your ideas heard, especially when science is supposed to be an objective, unbiased enterprise. You're supposed to listen to all the ideas and then sort them out. But when you just block an idea because it's new and throw it out just because it doesn't meet the current paradigm, that's not good.
Are we dealing with a situation where, and you use the word challenged, I would think suppressed is almost more accurate.
New ideas are always suppressed.
Yeah, I can think of things going on in physics and that kind of thing that I'm aware of peripherally. But I have a firsthand experience in that when I was in research at Michigan State University, I worked in a wine and grape research program, and you might think, well, gee, what kind of research did you do in wine and grape? Yeah, I'm sure you did lots of research.
Especially in the evening.
Yes, Friday nights. Friday nights were interesting in that lab. However, I had a fellow who later got his PhD who gave a brilliant analysis one night after we'd been out picking grapes. We were in the, you know, you often have deep scientific and philosophical talks while you're in the car driving back, or in the van driving back from these things, because something comes to somebody's mind and it pops up. So he came up, there was a scientific way that they determined how to do certain kinds of pruning methods. And he questioned the basis for that to the professor in the program. Well, the professor, you could watch the hackles come up on the back of his neck. And the reason the hackles came up on the back of his neck was because he had studied under the guy who came up with the scientific formula by which these canes were pruned. Now, the presentation that was given was very sound. The fellow who was questioning this thing, it was very sound. And like I said, he later got a PhD, and now he runs a winery. But he was brilliant in this kind of thinking. But immediately, it became clear that he was not going to be asked to do that kind of research in this program. So I can see where that kind of thinking is suppressed I've always said that peer review is both the friend and the enemy of science. It's the friend in that it protects things from coming in and being done in a very strange manner, but it's the enemy because new ways of thinking about things are not allowed.
That's basically true, and it's not the way it should be. And typically, science is always looked at as something that is very objective, very unbiased, but scientists develop their own opinions, their own biases, and it's not easy to change the current system. And that's where we are with intelligent design and evolution. Evolution is the paradigm, and it's not going to go away quietly.
So basically, what we're not asking it to go away, though, per se.
No.
What we're asking for is equal footing,
right,
to present a different way of examining the evidence.
Right. And that's where we come back to the First Amendment principle. Evolution is based on materialism or atheism, which is a religion. And the public schools do not look at it as a religion. They look at it as something secular, non-religious. But if the First Amendment principle of religious neutrality and objectivity is followed, then evolution cannot be viewed as okay and intelligent design as not okay. They both have to be considered. And I'm not asking for creationism to be taught by itself or intelligent design to be taught by itself. They have to compete. But I believe that if evolution is able to compete with design and creation, then design and creation will win because the evidence is on our side.
Well, and it's interesting, Dr. Latimer, because as you guys were having your conversation, I was able to look up, and the case that I was remembering was fairly famous one, and I'm sorry I didn't pull it up right off the top of my head. It was 1961. It's Torcaso versus Watkins.
Right.
Now, this was a case that was decided by the United States Supreme Court when a gentleman, Torcaso, had filed to be a notary public in the state of Maryland, but Maryland had a requirement to profess a belief in God to hold public office. Yeah, this is 1961, ladies and gentlemen, not 1861, okay? Mm-hmm. And Torcaso sued on the count that he was an atheist, and to require him to have a belief in something he says he doesn't believe in was unconstitutional. Well, the court did find in that case that that was unconstitutional according to their interpretation of the First Amendment's Establishment Clause. Now, it's interesting because, you know, what we were talking about, Justice Black wrote the majority opinion for this case, and he stated here, and I think this kind of falls into what you were talking about just a moment ago, and he says, "We repeat and again reaffirm that neither a state nor the federal government can constitutionally force a person, quote, to profess a belief or disbelief in any religion, unquote. Neither can constitutionally pass laws or impose requirements which aid all religions as against non-believers. And neither can aid those religions based on a belief in the existence of God as against those religions founded on different beliefs." And there's a footnote in the case, which is part of the case record. This footnote 11 is very important because the footnote says, "Among religions in this country which do not teach what would generally be considered a belief in the existence of God are Buddhism, Taoism, ethical culture, secular humanism, and others." So they even left the door open for any new formulation of a quote-unquote religion that would come along that would be non-theistic. Mm-hmm. But when we're dealing with atheism or secular humanism, it's seen as a religion.
Yes.
By the court. And this is a body of case law that's now 50-plus years old. But you're saying that...
It's not the only case either.
It's not the only case either.
By
you're
any
right.
means.
But it's like the seminal case. It's the one that...
One of the early ones.
It's the one that in the law books they refer to most often when they start talking about this issue. And in 1961, so what you're saying is that many courts, and I'm assuming these are like district courts or appellate courts...
They go all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Are all the ID cases, any of them going up to the U.S. Supremes?
No.
I didn't think they had yet. But what I'm saying is this is the U.S. Supreme Court's dicta on this particular issue about what constitutes a religion and what state or locals can and can't do, or federal level can and can't do in relation to that religion. It would seem that what COPE is proposing with your definition of religious matters would fall right in line with the Torcaso decision and this expansion of it by Justice Black, that you're saying that when it comes to the creation slash ID cases, these lower courts are totally ignoring.
Well, they're ignoring the inclusive definition of religion. They're not using it. And therefore, they arrive at the conclusion that creationism and ID are religion, and evolution is not religion. You have to use the right definition of religion to get to where you want to go.
So in other words, in order to be able to get the court's thinking changed, this is where COPE is working in at the state levels and maybe even in the local levels to get that more inclusive definition of religion adopted, whether it be in state statute or in local districts in their decision-making process with curriculum. Is that correct? Right.
Yes. Once you adopt the inclusive definition of religion, then you have to look at the curriculum and see very easily that it's not followed. And at that point, curriculum should change. Whether it changes at the state level or the local district level is yet to be seen. But you have to recognize the court definition of religion before you can start to address the curriculum issues.
Okay. Well, so how is COPE going about doing this? What's your mechanism?
Well, we plan to work with both state boards of education and state legislatures, basically. Or we can work directly with parents and district officials within the local school districts. And we're open to any of those ideas. In Ohio, we are looking at possible legislation in this area. We're also going to challenge the State Board of Education, I think, later in the year when they try to adopt the Next Generation Science Standards, which are the standards that have been developed by CHIEVE and other organizations and will become part of the Common Core in the future. But so far, Ohio has not acted on the new science standards, but they're very materialistic, atheistic, and we're going to challenge the state board if they try to adopt it.
Well, so, I want to talk about that a little bit more in depth here in just a moment. But first and foremost, how can people, if they're interested in this topic, if they're interested in what COPE is doing, how can they get in contact with you?
Well, just go to our website, which is www.copeinc.org. And all of this information is on there. And I think if you read the website carefully, you would find all the information you need. We also invite people to contact us directly if they need more information or if they have questions about a local issue or need help with something. And the easiest way to do that is by email, which is info@copeinc.org, info@copeinc.org. Again, the website is www.copeinc.org.
Okay. Now, you brought up a couple of titles, I guess, when you were talking just a minute ago, that I'm sure that the vast majority of our listeners have no idea what you're talking about.
Probably.
So let's expand on that a little bit. You mentioned two things, the Next Generation Science Standards, and you also mentioned the Common Core. Right. And now, I think we ought to take those in reverse order because I think it'd make a whole lot more sense to our listeners if we build from the ground up. Now, explain what Common Core is and where Ohio is positioned with this.
Common Core started as a private non-governmental effort spearheaded by ACHIEVE, which is a non-governmental organization that works on education issues. And in 2010, they came out with standards in two areas, English and math. The states, in fact, 45 out of the 50 states, adopted these standards in math and English and are now using them. And most of them were adopted in 2010 by the states.
If I may interject here, wasn't just as simple as states looking at this and saying, this was a wonderful idea, let's just adopt these standards. They were tied to something, weren't they?
They were tied to federal money.
Of course. There we go. The carrot that's dangled out in front of states all the time. Federal money. And this federal money was tied to a program that was called
Race to the Top.
Which Ohio gleefully, blissfully, under, I think it was the leadership of maybe John Houston when he was in the Senate.
That sounds right.
Embraced Race to the Top. And if I'm wrong about that, sorry there, no. Secretary of State, but I don't think I was wrong about that. But they embraced Race to the Top and the federal money. But when they embraced it, the shackles were thrown around their wrists that they were mandated to adopt the Common Core standards in English and in mathematics, correct?
That's correct, but it's even worse than that.
Oh, okay. I haven't over-dramatized it enough, so go for it.
almost all states applied for Race to the Top grants. but only a few were given. However, on application, you had to accept the Common Core standards, whether you got the Race to the Top award or not.
Wow. So, it's like you had to promise to pay for the date, right, whether you got kissed or not.
That's it.
So, yeah, just a few states got the money, but all the states that applied got the Common Core. There's a pretty big effort these days for states to challenge the Common Core. And in fact, about 10 states right at the moment are looking at bills in their legislatures that would repeal their allegiance to Common Core. None of those bills have been accepted yet, but it's very early in the legislative year. And I think a number of states this year are going to withdraw from Common Core, and I'd like for Ohio to be one of them, but right now we don't have a bill to do that.
Well, I think our problem in Ohio is we seem to have leadership in this state, from the governor on down to some of our legislative leaders, who are more than happy to bend over backwards to take lots and lots of boatloads of federal money.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just education.
Yeah, not just education. The Medicaid issue is what I'm referring to, and we're going to talk about that more on another program. But really what we've got a situation is, Ohio now doesn't have control of its content standards in mathematics and in English.
That's right.
They are now federalized. That's right. We have the federal government and the federal education bureaucracy writing and determining and dictating those curricula for the state of Ohio, for our public schools, for the graduation test, because they're going to align all the tests with the core standards. So what happens, Dr. Latimer, if we continue down this road and we don't repeal or rescind Ohio's involvement with the Common Core standards?
Well, then we have no authority within the state to have our own standards. School districts lose their authority. The state loses its authority, and it all goes to the federal government.
So what you're saying is somebody like old San Arne Duncan, who's the Department of Education head in Washington, D.C., the Secretary of Education, or, say, Barack Obama, or even worse, maybe, you know, he hands that off to a Valerie Jarrett or somebody, will determine what our little boys and girls in Ohio will learn from pre-K on up to college level.
Right. That's correct. And, you know, I'm not terribly worried about English and math, but when it comes to issues like science and evolution and environmentalism and social studies and history, I'm much more worried about those, and those are coming in the future.
That deep, moanful sound you're hearing right now is the death cry of local control. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. For those of you who are still under the delusion that there is local control over your school district, I've got some bad news for you, and if it's too much for you to bear, I guess you're going to turn your radio off right now. But for those of you who have got the Constitution to stick with us on this, you have to start understanding that the feds dangle money to get control. And they've done so in at least two areas in public education, English and mathematics. They're getting ready through ACHIEVE, this non-governmental organization, which I think if you started taking a good close look at them, is probably filled with ex-bureaucrats from the Federal Department of Education, and lots of federal money being floated to them through various sources, are pushing for the next generation science standards. They're also, and I looked at your website, and I'm like sitting here shocked, because they're not just talking about science standards. I mean, you had a whole list of the various types of standards that are coming down the pike with this. Could you care to share with some of our listeners exactly what we can expect from these national standards, not just in science or math or English, but we're talking social studies and what else?
Social studies is coming after science. There are national social studies standards. They're put out by the National Curriculum Standards for the Social Studies, NCSS. Which is a private organization, of course. There are very liberal standards. There's not a movement right now to get them adopted nationally, but they are intended to be national standards, and they're very progressive, liberal in their biases, and they're coming down the pike. I wouldn't guess it would be very far in the future. There also are national standards in sexuality education.
Oh, hold the phone.
Yeah.
Hold the phone. Ladies and gentlemen, repeat that, Bob, if you would.
There are coming standards in sexuality education.
I leave it to our listeners' imagination as to what that might be. If you know anything about what's being pushed from the federal level on down, well, we know that in many publicly funded colleges and universities, we're having entire units of study on how to make a porn film or how to masturbate.
Well,
these are the type of things that we could be looking at in our junior high and high school level.
You're not that far off, because one of the Ivy League schools, and I think it was Harvard?
Yale.
Just had a conference in which called into question the current standards on things like
bestiality,
multiple partner marriage, or polyamory. Any kind of sexual perversion you can think of, they held a conference to attempt to, in their own words, normalize these things. So how hard would it be if you get it into the educational curriculum to explain that these things are, quote unquote, there is no normal. Anything that you feel or that you desire is available to you as long as someone doesn't get hurt or die, and even they can get hurt as long as they want to be hurt.
As long as they consent to it.
Yeah. How hard would it be if you're teaching that in a school to get that at the college level and then on into the policy level?
Well, it's not very hard at all, because if you think about it, right now in this country, our nation is going through a identity crisis over the issue of same-sex marriage. Wouldn't it be so much easier to get rid of all these puritanical and prudish ideas that locals have in many of these areas, like Ohio with our marriage amendment, if we push national standards for how we teach our kids about sex? Well, you know, you can kiss goodbye to all the groups that are teaching abstinence until marriage education, because,
right,
you know, that would be discriminatory to teach about marriage because, oh, well, in Ohio, two same-sex people who love each other can't get married, right? So I see this coming down. Ladies and gentlemen, this is like dominoes, okay?
Right.
The train is being set up so that when they push the one over, the rest of them are going to fall in sequence until they get the picture they're looking for that develops. Now, if you ever see somebody doing championship dominoes with all these designs and everything in different colors, you know it's beautiful, but you know what's going to come out of this set of dominoes is going to be anything but beautiful, and it's going to be aimed right between the eyes of our children.
Progressives always do things slowly. They have plenty of time, and it's very easy to see why they chose English and math as the first standards to go national, because they're less controversial.
Absolutely.
But you go to science, then you go to social studies, then you go to sex ed, it just gets worse. So they give us a little bit, and then they keep piling it on.
And once the camel's nose is under the tent, so to speak, especially if that camel's nose is filled with federal dollars to hand to the states, they figure the states are going to just invite the rest of the camel into the tent to see how much more money's taped to the body.
Good way to look at it.
I'm sorry. I sometimes get a little graphic on this program. Now, as you said, we have fights all the time in this state. I've been involved in the legislative process for almost 20 years. And Bob, I know you've been around about that long too, because you and I met each other back when the first round of science standards fights came out. And matter of fact, you and I both served on another little organ that's a precursor to COPE, sort of, called Science Excellence for All Ohioans.
Right.
We were fighting the fight back then to keep the materialistic, evolutionistic only model out of the standards, or at least give it balance and let things be taught in an open atmosphere in the classroom in order to understand what's going on with that. It sounds to me like names have changed, but the game's still the same.
Yeah, but our strategy is much different this time.
Well, maybe our strategy is, but it sounds to me like our opponent's strategy is pretty much the same as it always has been.
Well, they have, and their strategy is to claim that our way of thinking is unconstitutional.
Well, yeah. That's interesting that.
And they're not. Well, they're not going to be able to get away with that anymore.
Well, I hate to say it. Many of us didn't think that the feds were going to be able to get away with Obamacare either, but they ended up getting John Roberts redefining what a penalty means.
Hopefully the battle's not quite over yet.
And well, no. I honestly, I believe that God is in control and he's sovereign and the battle belongs to him. And so I do believe that we are called to be faithful and not necessarily to be successful right off bat. I love what you said about progressives because I believe Christians could take a very strong note from that in that we have to understand we have time. Christians believe that basically that the world's going to end tomorrow, many of them do, and that all of it is doom and gloom and everything's going to get worse and worse and then the end's going to come. And oftentimes that colors how they address these issues, how much fight they have in them to stand up for their children and their children's children. But the point is that God's sovereign and control and he has put us on this earth to be salt and light, to come into these arenas, to hold up a standard that's based upon absolute truth, that's based upon the fact that God is who he says he is, and his word applies, and it applies in English and math and science and history and, well, yeah, sexuality as well. And if we don't start engaging more fully and understand it's a long-term process, just like the progressives, because progressives will continue at this for decades.
Well, they've been going on for well over 100 years so
far.
Absolutely,
they have. As a matter of fact, this week in our classes, which would have been held last night as you're hearing this, we went through an exercise discussing how the modern progressive movement came together with a bunch of college students in a loft over a restaurant in New York City and ended up basically taking over the world. Inside of 100 mm-hmm. years. Well, basically mm-hmm. taking over most of the means of education, labor, production, religion,
policy,
etc. And media, exactly. But the point is, many Christians can't seem to be bothered with any of that. They can't seem to be bothered with the idea that we actually have to have vision and a goal set, and we have to be able to stand on it and fight and move forward and have to fall back sometimes and keep moving forward. Because everybody wants it done yesterday. They want it. We've adopted what I call the microwave mentality. If it's not hot and ready in 30 seconds, it's too much trouble.
No, but you have to fight your battles one at a time. You have to pick your battles.
You do.
And you have to settle for less than you would really like. But that's progress.
But that's how you move forward, and that's how you win. Mm-hmm. We're having this argument over various pieces of legislation down at the State House right now about how fast do you move on things, and these people aren't moving fast enough. And, you know, Chuck, you know, as you mentioned earlier, I brought up the argument the day that we're taping this. I brought up the argument to these legislators like, hey, I've been around here for 20 years, and I've worked on some very key pro-family, pro-life policies. None of them took less than 3 years worth of work to put forward. It didn't take 3 months. It didn't take 3 days like some people think legislation ought to take. Sometimes it takes 3, 5, 7 years or more. I mean, there's one piece you and I are working on, Chuck.
Yep.
It's been around for over a decade. We just got past one last session that had been in the works for over 10 years, and that was the teaching of the founding documents in our public schools.
Yes.
Yes. Shock and awe, ladies and gentlemen, they weren't doing it. And we had to actually pass state statute to require school districts to teach the founding documents.
Yeah, and a word about that. The fact is, the law is very explicit about what is supposed to be taught, and the standards that are being developed are in violation of the specifics of the law.
Right, and that's another problem we're going to have. You know, you talk about local control. What about state sovereignty over our education choices? Mm-hmm. Well, if they started keep accepting federal money, there is no such thing. But even so, we pass a law like the Founding of America documents piece, and then this feds or this ACHIEVE or whoever it's going to be, the National Social Studies folks, come in and say, well, here are the national standards and here's a little federal money behind them. Oh, by the way, we're not going to start teaching history or social studies until about, 1915, 1913. Actually, 1913, because that's when the income tax
That's when the income tax and the Senate.
And the 17th Amendment was adopted. So we're going to start from there and go forward. And if you want our money, you can only teach from there forward. In the framework we want to teach it in. We want you to teach it in. Because if we go back and look at the founding era or the Civil War or Reconstruction or anything of that nature, then we run into that little problem of religion. Right?
Right. Well, we're not trying to avoid religion. That used to be one tactic. But this is a religious issue. The whole question about what is taught in our schools is a religion issue, and we need to deal with it like that. We need to call evolution what it is, which is an atheistic religion. And we need to insist on objectivity and neutrality so that our ideas can be heard, so that Christian ideas can be heard. And we believe that if we adopt this objective, neutral treatment of subjects, then we're going to win, because our viewpoint is truth, because it comes from God. And that's what the progressives, liberals are really afraid of, is their ideas won't stand up to the truth, and they won't. And that's what we've got to get, a level playing field, so that we can get all the ideas out there.
Now, before we close up, I do want you, we've got a little bit of time here, I want you to tell us a little bit about these next generation science standards, because your board at COPE mm-hmm. actually did a review and submitted a critique right. back to ACHIEVE during their open comment period. And tell us what you found, what you commented on, kind of briefly, and then what ACHIEVE's response was to your critiques.
Well, ACHIEVE's response is easy. They never responded.
Okay, so in other words, even though you guys are all, just about the vast majority of you on your board are all scientists, some are educators in the public system, mm-hmm. some are legal minds like your attorney, and I'm seeing aeronautics and chemistry and education, another member who's has a master's in education, health and physical education, business education, physics, mathematics, philosophy. Obviously, you guys are not a shabby board of just a bunch of local yokels who don't like what they're teaching John and them their schools. You guys have some serious credentials behind you, but you're saying this organization took your critiques or your comments about their standards and said, to you.
Well, they didn't even say that. They said nothing.
They said nothing.
And they changed nothing. The science standards are just what you would expect them to be. They're totally atheistic. They're totally materialistic. There's no mention of religion, theistic religion. There's no mention of God. There's no mention of intelligent design. The two areas that are obviously the worst are science, where you're talking about origins of life, development of life over time, origin of the universe. They only give materialistic, atheistic answers. The environmentalism curriculum is also very liberal, very progressive. It emphasizes global warming, the negative human effects on the environment, and sustainability, which includes all kinds of issues like smart growth and slowing down the economy and all that. And these are all very progressive ideas. The science standards were put together by an elite group of education and political people. There's little input from real teachers or parents or any other stakeholders. They're just all put together by this small elite group of individuals who think they know what needs to be done, and then it's just a typical liberal exercise. And so there's really nothing in the standards to recommend them. They're just totally bad. And if these go into effect in a lot of states, it's just going to ruin our efforts to get the system changed. And as I said, I'm not quite so concerned about math and English, but I'm very concerned about science, and I'll be very concerned about social studies and sex ed if they ever get to the national level. We've just got to nip it in the bud before it gets any farther along.
Yeah, I would probably say when they get to the national level, not if, because it looks like that's the goal that they're going down. Mm-hmm. Now, if folks want to get involved with COPE, you know, we've sent them to the website copeinc.org, copeinc.org. But when they're there, now how do they get involved with you guys?
Well, we do have membership.
Okay.
And it's free.
Now, did you hear that? Let's repeat that. Their membership is free.
Right. We will send out newsletters from time to time. But what we really need people to do is become active in their own areas, whether it's your local school district, if you have a problem with curriculum, at the state level, if there are problems that need to be addressed. We need to know about those, and we need people that are in the states and districts willing to stand up and do something about them. So we're looking for input on where things need to be addressed in the states. But just your membership, the application form is on the website. Just send it in. You can become a member for free, and we'll keep you updated. And we really do need lots of grassroots support for this to work.
Okay.
Make sure you give us your website again so we We got to repeat that every once in a while, or people, maybe usually about the third or fourth time, somebody runs and gets a pen and writes it down. But of course,
that's a hint.
Yeah, that's right. But even if you can't find a pen, go to www.principledpolicy.com and you will see a link to COPE on our website.
If you just go straight to COPE, it'll be a shorter.
There you go.
That's right. You don't have to go through the middleman.
Although we'd like you to, and stop and visit a while and see some of the other things we've been doing.
Yeah, go ahead and give that.
Go ahead, Bob.
That's COPE, Inc., COPEINC.org.
Okay. So what are the next steps here in Ohio? Obviously, you made a presentation, as we're recording this, earlier that day to some legislators. We've talked to some members of the General Assembly. What is your next steps here in Ohio?
Well, we've gotten some ideas on the kind of legislation that legislators would like to see. We are going to write up a proposed bill that we'll resubmit to the legislators and let them go from there. We're not quite sure entirely what will be in the bill, but it's going to be things that will help the situation in Ohio. And then later in the year, when the State Board of Education looks at the next generation science standards and moves to adopt them, and we're pretty sure they will this year, then we'll go to the State Board and state our reasons why these should be rejected.
Sure, and I know that you have much of that information on your website as far as your analysis of those standards, why they should be objected. Do you have links on your website for the State Board of Education for people if they want to start contacting their members, especially if they live in districts? Some of our districts, you know, the board's fairly, I would say, progressive, but some of the members of the board, including the state board president, I believe, are fairly conservative and might be amenable to what we're talking about.
There are maybe 4 or 5 board members out of the 18, 19, that are reasonably conservative, but the rest of them are pretty liberal, so we're going to have a hard fight. Since we are a national organization, we don't have local links in Ohio, and I don't think we'll want to put those up, but we can put them on our Facebook page for sure.
Or you can come to principledpolicy.com, because I think we'll have them up here fairly
well, shortly. Well, remember, too, our friend Mark Stevenson
at Ohioans for
Educational Freedom. Ohioans for Educational Freedom is constantly working on state board issues. Mark has done a bang-up job. In fact, he just got they were very successful in getting a couple of conservative candidates through, I think.
Right, well,
on the last election.
They actually did. And as a matter of fact, 2 of those members are now sitting on the State Board of Education. So now you can find them at their website at OhioansForFreedom.com. Ohioans for Freedom. And that's Ohioans for Educational Freedom is the website. Now, transparency, Mark Stevenson is on the board of the Institute for Principal Policy.
That's how we know him. That's why we know what he's doing.
But
yeah.
He also runs this organization, Ohioans for Educational Freedom, which we strongly endorse and support here at the Institute. So they would have all the information on the state board, and I'm sure that probably Dr. Latimer, you're going to be working with them as well as this moves along so that everybody can get information and we can be all on the same page. Now, in just kind of a program note, Chuck, if I might, we are continuing our Institute on the Constitution courses at Mount Vernon, Nazarene University, and in Marengo at Marengo Christian Church. Right now, at this point, our registrations are all closed, but if you're in those areas and you want to sit in on a class in order to see how the program goes and how we teach it, you are welcome to audit as long as you contact us ahead of time and let us know you're coming. I believe this... we're going to have a homeschool group that's coming in to one of our classes to sit in on a class just to find out how it's taught. And this is for those of you who may have heard about it but weren't sure, and you kind of want to, before you invest your finite resources and your 12 weeks of time, want to see how this goes. Well, we're more than happy, as long as you contact us up front and let us know what date you want to come. Now, we're on Fridays, 3:30 to 5 in Mount Vernon and 7 to 9 in Marengo.
2 things before we sign off. Remind everyone about our policy conference, our Semper Reformanda conference that's coming up April 25th through 27th with the Reverend Joe Moorcraft. It's at Grace Presbyterian Church, OPC, on Postlethwaite Road. That's in northwestern Columbus. Please join us. Go to our website at www.principledpolicy.com to see the details for that conference. It's $20, folks, for a day and a half of teaching with some of the finest teachers both in the country and in Central Ohio. The subject is going to be on history and the impact of the church on culture. And we would invite you to join us, $20, cheap at twice the price. So stop in and join us there. Now, Barry, I'm hearing about a new Institute on the Constitution class that will be opening in the Canal Winchester area sometime around April 2nd. So excellent. Keep a lookout at www.principledpolicy.com for information on that class coming up. I believe the registration is going to open very soon, and they're going to go. And Bob, please once again give us your website information.
COPEINC, copeinc.org.
Join us again on Monday for another Principles and Policies.